Last in Order of Disappearance, a thriller serial in six parts adapted from his book by Simon Brett, starring Francis Matthews as Charles Paris. Part 6, King Rat. In the winter of 1973-74, Charles Paris, a middle-aged actor, has been helping a young dancer, Jackie, investigate the death of her elderly lover, the impresario Marius Steen. In spite of the findings of an autopsy, Jackie is convinced Marius was murdered by his son Nigel and makes no secret of her suspicions. The child she's expecting will, when born, inherit part of Marius Steen's fortune, and an attempt has already been made to make her fall downstairs and miscarry. Now, Charles Paris, too, has been the victim of sabotage. On the set of a horror film, he's been shot in the arm. After hospital treatment, he goes to stay with his daughter, Juliet. But the next morning, she, worried by his condition, has sent for the doctor.
All right, Mr. Paris, let's have a look at the thermometer.
I'm afraid Juliet's making an awful lot of fuss. It's just I passed out this morning when I tried to get up.
Well, that could be due to loss of blood and, of course, shock. A gunshot wound is a major shock to the system, Mr. Paris.
Ah, you've got a slight temperature. That'd be consistent. Consistent with what, Dr. Marsh? Reaction to a gunshot wound, you mean?
Perhaps. But I'm wondering whether it could be something else.
What?
You've got all the symptoms. Slight fever, a very mild rash on the chest.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
That's very mild. And a sore throat. Have you been in contact with German measles recently?
Not as far as I know. Why, do you think I've got German...
That's what it looks like.
Oh, good heavens.
Oh, could I have your address and national health number? Just to keep the record straight, as you're not one of my regular patients.
Yeah, sure. I think they're in the front of my diary. Inside pocket of my jacket.
Oh, thank you.
So what should I do about it?
The German measles? Just rest up for a few days till you feel better. You can stay down here in Pangbourne, can't you?
Well, I suppose Juliet wouldn't mind. My son-in-law, Miles, might.
There. Thanks. Oh, of course, there is one thing with German measles.
What's that?
Well, if a mother-to-be gets it, the unborn child can be affected. So, if you know anyone who's pregnant, keep out of her way.
Oh, no, Charles. For God's sake, don't come near me. It can be awful if the child's born blind or something
terrible. Don't worry, Jackie. I'll stay away. How is my little bed-sitter?
Fine. You won't recognise the place, so I've even dusted it.
Oh, good heavens, the furniture will die of shock. Anyway, look, I'll stay put down here in Pangbourne and you stay where you are. You'll be quite safe. Nigel Steen, or whoever's after you, will never look there. And I'll be in touch when I'm clear of the infection.
How long will that be?
Oh, I don't know. I should have asked, couldn't I? I'll ring Dr. Marsh and check.
Ring who?
Dr. Marsh.
Australian?
Yes.
Good God.
Why, do you know him?
Well, if it's the same man, he was the one who did my abortion down in Streatley in the summer.
What? But it wasn't a legal one, was it?
No, Marius got Nigel to fix it up.
So Marsh was the Steen's doctor?
I suppose so.
Then it was probably Marsh who was called in when Marius died.
Yes, it was. He was at the inquest.
He was? Jackie, for God's sake, why didn't you tell me this before?
I didn't think it was important, is it?
Is it?
Charles...
Oh, Jackie, it's all right, it's all right. Just sit tight. Now, don't worry about anything. I'll be in touch. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Oh, my God. He's got the address. Juliet, I've got to borrow your car.
So you've just appropriated your son-in-law's Cortina?
That's right, Gerald. Miles will be absolutely livid when he finds out.
But Jackie was there, again.
Oh, yes, yes. I came straight here from St. Mary's Hospital, where they'd given me a clean bill of health. Poor young doctor in casualty obviously thought I was a nutter, rushing in and asking if I'd got German measles.
Is Jackie with you now?
No, I packed her off to the cinema.
Wasn't that a risk?
No, I needed her out. I just had a call from Joanne Mingy's, you know, Marius Steen's PA.
No, Nigel Steen's PA.
Well, no, that was part of what she had to tell me. She's been sacked.
No.
Straight after Christmas, with a year's salary in lieu of notice.
Very generous payoff.
From somebody as mean as Nigel Steen, it's got to be hush money.
Yes.
Anyway, she's coming round here shortly. Wants to talk further about the death of Marius Steen.
It's not one big thing that makes me suspicious, Charles. Just lots of little dubious details.
Like?
Like the way Nigel lied over his movements on the Saturday night. Like the way he sacked me. Like the way he's been behaving since his father's death. And the week before it come to that.
How's he been behaving?
He's very twitchy. Jumps whenever the phone rings. As if there's something he's frightened of.
And your explanation of all this is that he murdered his father?
It's the obvious explanation.
Well, except for the findings of the post-mortem and the inquest.
Oh, yes.
And the fact that Nigel has no motive. It was in his interest that his father should live. Well, at least until the 7 years were up.
What 7 years?
Oh, yes, you didn't know about that. Marius had made over most of his property to Nigel some years back, to avoid death duties. Now, he died less than 6 years after the gift, just 3 days short of the sixth anniversary, in fact.
And what did that mean?
Well, it meant that death duties were only reduced by 30%. Another 3 days, and it would have been 60%.
Really? Makes quite a big difference on an estate as big as Marius's.
Exactly. And it rules out any motive for Nigel to have killed him.
Well, he's done something.
You sound just like Jackie.
Oh, do I?
One thing you said just now interested me.
Oh?
You said Nigel was twitchy and nervous the week before the murder. I mean the death.
Yes.
Now, I thought he was in Streatley that week.
Well, only part of it. He went down on the Thursday to go through some business things with Marius and then came back on the Friday afternoon.
Friday the 7th of December. Look, let's trace both their movements through that week. Where were they on the Sunday? I mean the 2nd.
I think they were both at Orme Gardens. But then Marius drove down to Streatley that night on his own to read some scripts.
And when he did one of his long script reading sessions, he'd cut himself off completely?
Yes. Just switch on the answer phone and not listen to any of the messages until he'd read all the scripts.
Hmm. So when did you yourself last speak to him?
Small hours of the Sunday morning. At the party on stage at the King's.
Oh, yes, the celebration of the 1,000 performances of Sex of One and Half a Dozen of the Other.
That's it.
Ugh. Right now, say the Monday morning, Marius is in Streatley. Where's Nigel at the office?
No, he came in after lunch that day.
Unusual?
Not very. He hasn't got his father's dedication.
Well, Marius had a lot of that, and stamina. Incidentally, how was he at the Sex of One party?
Marius, in marvellous form, leaping around like a boy of 20. Dancing with all the girls.
Including you?
Yes.
You loved him, didn't you?
Yes.
I thought so. Now then, which car did Nigel go down to Streatley in on the Thursday?
His own, the Interceptor. It was after that he complained about the brakes to the chauffeur, Morrison.
Right, and he uses the Interceptor again on the Sunday evening when he finds Marius dead. But we happen to know he also goes down on the Saturday evening with great secrecy in the Datsun. Why? The Datsun. There's something at the back of my mind about Marius Sting and the Datsun. And I can't for the life of me think what it is.
Nor can I. I mean, Marius hardly ever used the Datsun. Preferred the Rolls.
Mm.
God, the petrol bills we used to get on the...
That's it! Petrol!
Well, what are you talking about?
Marius Sting said we leave the Rolls in the garage and use the Datsun.
I don't know.
There was a quote from him. I remember seeing it. The Evening Standard was doing a feature on the fuel crisis and asked various celebrities for their reactions. Yes, and that was on the Monday I did that awful radio play, which was on the 3rd of December.
Hey, where are you going?
I'm going to ring a friend on the Evening Standard. Oh, that's a welcome sight, man with drinks. Two large scotches, Keith. Thanks. Seedy old places, isn't it? The Montrose Club. Beloved of actors and other alcoholics.
Well, so long as the booze is all right, who cares about the decor? Cheers.
Cheers, Keith. About this story, It was on Monday, the 3rd of December.
Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell. I've done a lot of stories since then.
But it was a sort of roundup of people's reactions to the petrol crisis. You know, pictures and comments. There was Steen.
I don't remember him.
Some footballer, I think.
No.
And some leggy model on a bike.
Oh. Yes, I do remember her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crappy idea, wasn't it? Some Burke thought it up at an editorial conference and Muggins here has to ring round all these celebrities to get quotes.
Can you remember phoning Marius Sting?
Don't think I can. If it was a Monday morning, I'd have had a skinful the night before. Now, just a minute, though, I remember. I rang through and I got some old Bert with a foreign accent being facetious on an answer phone, that's it. So I told the machine what it was all about and moved on to ring a golfer and a black and white minstrel.
But did Steen ring back?
Yeah.
And are you sure it was Marius Steen himself who spoke to you?
No, I've never met the bloke, have I?
Well, was it the same voice as the one on the answer phone?
No. It was more cultured and younger.
What it means, Gerald, is that Nigel Steen now has two secret visits down to Streetsy to explain.
Really? Well, I know about the one the night before his father's death, but what about...
But he must have been down there the Sunday before as well. Well, the Monday morning, anyway, because he returned the call on the answer phone.
Oh, yes. Well, where are you calling from?
The Montrose.
I see. Is Jackie with you?
No, she'll be back at the bedsitter by now. But it's all right. Joanne Mingies was waiting in for her.
Are you sure you can trust Miss Mingies?
Oh, I'm sure I can. Well, at least I think so.
What was that?
I must go.
Oh, yes. Urgent call of alcohol?
No, I want to get back to the bedsitter and see that Jackie's all right. Jackie! Why's the door open? Joanne? Joanne! What the hell? All right, don't struggle. Don't be still. Let me untie the gag. God, they did this tight.
Oh.
Sorry, where's Jackie?
Two men. Someone must have let them in the front
door. Oh, no.
They broke in here and took her.
Did you see them?
They had stockings over their heads. Oh, can you undo my ankle?
God, sorry. God, this is difficult with my arm.
One was very tall, thick set, the other short and thin.
Ah, oh, Nigel Steen's heavy, Jim and Eric. They're the ones who fixed my little accident on the film set. There.
Oh.
Come on, can you stand?
I think so.
We must follow them.
Where to? I mean, how do we know where they've gone?
I think it must be Streetsy. And I pray to God I'm right for the sake of Jackie's baby. So they are here. The interceptor, that's Nigel's. The van's Jem and Eric's. I don't know whose the Volvo is. Now, let's get into the house.
How?
Through the garage.
You seem to know your way about.
Jackie showed me the way in. The night I found Marius dead. Can I have the torch?
Yeah, here.
Yes. The roll still hasn't been moved. And there's the bit of rubber tubing Nigel used to siphon the petrol into the Datsun. And over there should be... Oh, my God, I've been so slow. Look.
Where?
Beside the freezer there.
There's nothing to see.
Exactly. When Jackie and I were here, there was a pile of full cardboard boxes, I remember, because I fell over them. And now they've been moved.
I don't see
I'll explain later. First, we've got to immobilize Jem and Eric. Now, let's see. That door on the left leads into the house.
Yes.
And the one directly in front of the car...
Is the utility room.
Yes. And is that where the main switches and fuses for the house are?
Oh, it's a long time since I've been down here, but I think so.
Good. Yes, they are. Look. And even better, the door opens outwards.
I don't understand.
You will. Listen, Joanne, in a minute, I want you to throw all of these switches.
Oh.
That's bound to bring somebody down to the fuse box. And then you hide behind the door. And once they're inside, close it on them.
But there's no lock.
Don't worry, Joanne. I've got a way of locking them in.
I've done the switches, Charles. But there doesn't seem to be anyone coming.
Just give them a moment to find a torch. You in position behind the door?
Yes. You all right in the car?
Oh, positive lap of luxury, my dear. Now then, key in ignition. Seems all right. I hope to God she starts.
I think I can
I don't know, Jen. What does he think? I bloody am electrician, handyman. Shine the torch over here.
Wherever it?
No, over here, in the utility room. I just hope there's some fuse wire in here. I'm expecting some men this lot.
Yeah, so do I.
No!
God there. That'll take a bit of shifting. They won't be able to move a Rolls Royce in a hurry. Lovely, Joanne. Great tea. I'm going upstairs.
Shall I come with you?
No, you go and get the police.
Seems like they've managed to get the lights back on.
Come on then, Marsh. Let's get it over with.
Charles Paris.
You're taking a very great risk.
Nothing to the risk you've taken, Nigel. And Dr. Marsh, we meet again.
Yes.
My God, what have you done to Jackie? Why is she lying on the bed like that? If you hurt her, I'll...
She's anaesthetized.
I see. All ready for your scalpel to murder her child.
Look, I'm leaving, Steen.
You can't do that. I need your help.
No, Steen, get out of this one on your own. In future, do your own dirty work.
What do you want, Paris? Money?
No.
I could give you a lot. I'll pay for silence.
And then set your thugs on me the first time my back's turned? No, thank you.
Then what do you want?
Well, just to talk. See if what I think is correct. Until the police come.
I see. Come through into the study.
I don't want to leave Jackie.
Oh, don't worry. She'll sleep a lot longer.
At least I'll cover her up. Poor kid. I hope to God I got here in time before...
Are
I...
you coming?
Yes.
Do sit.
Thank you.
Well, now, what's all this about the police? Shouldn't I be calling them to get you, as a common housebreaker?
You can try. But I think they'd find your case more interesting.
Do you? Why? What are you accusing me of? The inquest has already proved I did not murder my father.
No, that's not what I'm accusing you of.
What then?
I'll tell you. Stop me if I'm wrong. Now, this is the story as I see it. On Saturday the 1st of December, your father, Marius Steen, went to the Sex of One party at the King's Theatre. He enjoyed himself, danced, drank, and generally had a whale of a time. But the following day, Sunday the 2nd of December, because of his exertions, he suffered a second heart attack at the Orme Gardens house and died.
You're forgetting my
now,
father...
Now, you realised that because of the inconvenient timing of his death, you were going to be lumbered with one hell of a lot of estate duty. If you could conceal his death another fortnight, that duty would be 30% less. On a million, that's £240,000. Many crimes have been committed for less. And after all, you weren't going to commit a crime. Just create an illusion. Create the illusion that your father was still alive.
You're guessing, Paris. Well,
obviously you needed help. And you had it. Dr. Marsh would sign the death certificate with any date on it that you wanted. But corpses decompose, don't they? And the police might want to see your father's body. Well, the undertaker certainly would. So, how was it to be preserved? And then you thought, what about the good old beech trees down here in Streatley? Keep the old man in there. Get him out in good time to defrost. Maybe even put him in a hot bath to remove any traces of the preservation. And there you are. So, late on the Sunday night, with your father's body propped up in the rolls, you drive here, move a few boxes out of the deep freeze, and put your father in. But on Monday, you make a mistake by phoning the Evening Standard, and I can sympathize with your reasons for that, because it was a heaven-sent opportunity to assert your father's continued existence, wasn't it? Now, the only fly in the ointment was Jackie. If she kept on trying to contact your father, it could be awkward. Still, she was on her own, not very brave. A little intimidation should keep her quiet. An anonymous letter? And when that didn't work, your boy is Jem and Eric doing a flat over. Easy. It was all easy, wasn't it? But on the following Saturday, something really rattles you. You lose your nerve. Drive down here in secret, change the tape in your father's answer phone, prepare the body and move your whole schedule forward a week. Now, that, I must confess, is the bit I don't understand. By doing that, you made the whole crime worthless. You were losing money. Well, no doubt you had your reasons. But when the new will came to light, you were liable to lose even more money. So, seeing the flaw in its hastily drawn up provisions, you started your vendetta against Jackie's child. a vendetta that Dr. Marsh was just about to complete when I arrived. I think that sums up most of my conclusions. How am I doing?
In terms of accuracy, pretty good. In terms of survival, less good. My father always kept a gun in this drawer. Handy when an intruder happens to break in, an intruder like you.
If shooting me is as successful as your other crimes, I think I'm pretty safe.
Quiet! One thing you got wrong, Paris, is the extent of my crime. What you've described is, what, fraud? Maybe? Harassment? But there was something else.
Yes, I know. Bill Sweet's murder.
Yes.
What happened?
I was driving the Rolls from London on the Sunday, with my father's body in the back, and as I turned off the M4, suddenly, there was this maniac in the middle of the road flagging me down. I swerved to avoid him and hit his silly little car. I tried to drive on, but he came at me with some story of having run out of petrol. And then, he looked in the car and saw my father crumpled in the back, and he started to speak. And I just panicked and shot him.
What did you do then?
I went through his pockets. And for some reason, they were full of dirty pictures.
Did you know that he had any connection with your father?
No. Had he?
Oh, never mind. What did you do with the pictures?
I took them and his wallet and threw the lot with the gun into the river at Goring Bridge.
Why his wallet?
To disguise his identity. I don't know. I panicked. I wanted to forget all about him. Pretend it hadn't happened.
And that's why you haven't moved the Rolls since that night, hmm? You even left your father's key in it. You seem to do a lot of panicking, don't you? You're not a very impressive criminal.
If my plan had worked, it would have been a masterstroke. To save a quarter of a million? That's the sort of thing my father used to do.
But you could never do what your father did, could you, Nigel? Business? Women? Even crime? You just never made it. Because you never had the guts to carry anything through. Why didn't you carry this one through?
Because of you, you little sod.
Me?
Yes, you. You and your bloody detective Sergeant McWhirter. When you rang up on that Saturday evening and checked the registration of the Rolls, I thought the police were onto the M4 murder.
So that's what made you drive down in the Datsun and move the whole plan forward and lose £250,000?
Yes. So, shooting you will settle quite a few scores, Charles Paris. Come on now. Stand up. Over to that door. Open it.
What are you going to do?
We're going outside, Mr. Paris. I heard a noise. I got my gun and accidentally shot an intruder.
I don't think you'll shoot me, Nigel. Apart from that, how would you explain Jackie lying over there? Hmm? It wouldn't be one of your remote control crimes, you know. This would be cold blood.
And I'll do it.
I don't think you've got the nerve, Nigel. That'll be the police.
Blast you, Charles Paris. I'll get even with you.
You won't get away. They'll have the house surrounded.
Not the back way. I can get down to the river on the speedboat. They won't catch me.
Jackie. Jackie, wake up. Jackie.
Charles.
Oh, Jackie. Thank God you're all right.
Apparently, Gerald, I didn't see this because I was out cold, but Nigel rushed out of the back of the house. That's right, Charles.
Yes.
And you know it backs onto the Thames? Well, he got into the speedboat and he was in such a panic that he drove it straight into Goring Bridge. And he was killed.
And good riddance.
I agree. Oh, by the way, some more documents have come up neatly filed for his solicitors by Marius Steen. I think he'd rather regretted the gift of the property to Nigel.
Why? What did he do?
Well, he wrote to his son last November complaining in humble terms that he'd left himself short by the gift and hadn't taken inflation into account and that sort of thing. And would Nigel sign an agreement to let him have a small income from various shares and properties? Ever the mug, Nigel signed it.
And what did that mean?
Well, it made the whole gift thing invalid. Nigel would have had to pay duty on the whole estate without reduction.
Good God, you can't help admiring the old villain. Making his own son sign away his fortune.
He's an amazing character, Marius Dean. Really understood money.
Is it going to affect my inheritance?
Ah, who knows? All that's still to be sorted out by the accountants and solicitors.
I know. Endless meetings, confabulations, discussions, and consultations about the law. And where does all that get you?
Rich. Now, listen, I've got some tickets tonight for the April Fool's Midnight Matinee at the Parthenon.
Oh, Gerald, that's wonderful. All the stars will be there.
That's right. Now, let's all go along, Joanne. Charles, do you fancy it?
Doesn't really sound my scene, Gerald. They'll have a good time. Gerald loves all that showbiz schmaltz. So does Jackie. It's not your scene either, Joanne.
Not really.
You still miss Marius?
Yes. But the new job's busy, so it's not so bad.
No. Fancy a drink somewhere?
Thanks very much, but... No, I don't think so.
Are you sure I can't... Oh, taxi! Would you like to take this cab?
No, I'll walk. Thanks. Goodbye, Charles.
Goodbye, Joanne.
Where to, mate?
Could you take me to the Montrose Club, please?
In the final part of Cast in Order of Disappearance, Charles Paris was played by Francis Matthews, Jackie, Fiona Hendley, Nigel Steen, Richard Morant, Gerald Venables, Jeremy Child, Joanne Minges, Sandra Clark, Dr. Marsh and the Taxi Driver, John Strickland, Keith, Nigel Graham, Eric, Mark Jones. Cast in Order of Disappearance was adapted from his book by Simon Brett and produced by Martin Fisher.